Good morning. Also like to welcome you here. Welcome to the Bible study. We've been doing a Bible study entitled The Battle is the Lord's. We have spent a bit of time in Ephesians chapter 6 and just going through that. The armor of God. I'd like to today maybe go into Ezra and Nehemiah a bit, and I would like to finish up today. I feel like I've overstayed my welcome already, but I've been doing this longer than I had been anticipating, but hopefully we can finish up today. First of all, turn to Ephesians chapter 6, and we'll read a few verses out of Ephesians chapter 4, sorry. Verses 11 to 16, I think I'll read it in the New Living Translation. Now these are the gifts Christ gave to the church, the apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, and the pastors and the teachers. Their responsibility is to equip God's people to do his work and build up the church, the body of Christ. This will continue until we all come to such unity in our faith and knowledge of God's Son that we will be mature in the Lord, measuring up to the full and complete standard of Christ. Then we will no longer be immature like children. We won't be tossed and blown about by every wind of new teaching. We will not be influenced when people try to trick us with lies, so clever they sound like the truth. Instead, we will speak the truth in love, growing in every way more and more like Christ, who is the head of the body and the church. He makes the whole body fit together perfectly, as he does in his own special work. It helps the other parts grow so that the whole body is healthy and growing and full of love. Just verse 16 there in the King James Version says, from whom the whole body fitly joined together and compacted by that which every joint supplieth. It's a picture of a building fitly framed together. If we have some framers here, they know what that is like. So it's a picture of building. Maybe I should open it up if anybody has anything to say from previous Sundays. For myself, I guess it's been said that when sometimes when you talk or do something, it's like when you brush your teeth and you get toothpaste out of the tube. If you squeezed out too much, it can be a little messy, but if you try to put it back in, it is messier yet. So For myself, I think there's a lot of things that I am not not really sure that were maybe brought out clearly, but I trust that it can be something to work with. When we do Bible study, it's like the roots of a tree. When you look at a root mass, there's a lot of different branches, and as we do Bible study, as the roots grow down here, there's lots of room yet for for different roots to spring out and to grab more. So I believe that Bible study that starts at 10 and ends at 10:45 isn't going to cut it. We have to think of the parables that Jesus taught. There's many times he taught a parable then to the crowds, and then it was after the crowds had left that his disciples had asked him what he meant by that. We need to spend time alone in the Bible, alone with God, to get any benefit out of the Word. Anybody have anything they want to comment on? Then we'll go into Ezra. Like I said, we want to go over this fairly quickly. Just a few points I want to bring out here. As we go through here, we want to remember that the title of the Bible study, The Battle is the Lord's. And as we go into the battle, and also remember what we read this morning about Ephesians chapter 4, about the building. In verse 1 of Ezra, if any of you have something you want to pop in, just wave your hands and I will try to notice you. So this was after the children of Israel had gone into captivity, I believe, and had been there for 70 years. It says, in the first year of King Cyrus of Persia, the Lord fulfilled the prophecy he had given through Jeremiah. He stirred up the heart of Cyrus to put this proclamation in writing and send it throughout the kingdom. So maybe we'll just look at the Lord fulfilled the prophecy, it says here. In Jeremiah 25, verses 11 and 12. And this whole land shall be a desolation and an astonishment, and those nations shall serve the king of Babylon 70 years. And it shall come to pass when these 70 years are accomplished that I will punish the king of Babylon and that nation, saith the Lord, for their iniquity and the land of the Chaldeans, and it will make it perpetual desolations. And in 29, also in 29, Jeremiah 29, verse 10. For thus saith the Lord, after 70 years be accomplished at Babylon, I will visit you and perform my good word toward you in causing you to return to this place. So that was the prophecy that is being talked about here. He fulfilled the prophecy he had given through Jeremiah in that he had also prophesied about their restoration. Just for a side note, maybe turn to Jeremiah chapter 33, verse 5. maybe starting in verse 4. For thus saith the Lord, the God of Israel, concerning the houses of this city and concerning the houses of the kings of Judah, which are thrown down by the mounts and by the sword. They come to fight with the Chaldeans, but it is to fill them with dead bodies of men whom I have slain in my anger and in my fury, and for all whose wickedness I have hid my face from this city. So what God was saying here is destruction had been pronounced on Jerusalem, and anybody who rises, any man who will rise, will be like a dead man. Basically what he's saying, it's just like a dead man. He's already a dead man. So it's very important to realize that the battle is the Lord's, and unless the Lord build a house, they labor in vain that build it. And anybody who tries to rise up before the Lord's time is just like a dead man. So God stirred the heart of Cyrus, first of all, the king of Cyrus, and then in verse 5, Ezra chapter 1, verse 5, God stirred the hearts of the priests and the Levites and the leaders of the tribes of Judah and Benjamin to go to Jerusalem to build the temple of the Lord. So we have them returning then. In the next few chapters, it lists all the people who returned. In chapter 3, the altar is built. And in verse 7, of chapter 3, they hired the masons and they started getting on with the work, and then they put the foundation. When the foundation was in, at the end of chapter 3, there's a familiar passage here about the people shouting and praising the Lord because of the foundation of the Lord's temple had been laid. But when the priests and the Levites and the chief of the fathers, who were ancient men, had seen the first house, when the foundation of this house was laid before their eyes, wept with a loud voice, and many shouted aloud for joy, so that many people could not discern the noise of the shout of joy from the noise of weeping and of the people, for the people shouted with a loud shout, and the noise was heard afar off. And then in chapter 4, there was also some interesting portion here. At the beginning of chapter 4, there was some enemies of Judah and Benjamin heard that the exiles were rebuilding the temple of the Lord, the God of Israel. They approached Zerubbabel and other leaders and said, "Let us build with you, for we worship the same God as you do. We have sacrificed him to him since King Esarhaddon of Assyria brought us here." But Zerubbabel and Jeshua, the other leaders of Israel, replied, "You may have no part in this work. We alone will build the temple of the Lord, for the God of Israel, just as King Cyrus of Persia commanded us." Then in verse 4, so when that didn't work out, when they weren't allowed to help, the people of the land weakened the hands of the people of Judah and troubled them in building, and hired counselors against them to frustrate their purpose all the days of King Cyrus of Persia, even until the reign of Darius. So I'm not exactly sure what had They had stopped the building for some time anyhow, and then it resumed here in chapter 5. It was resumed again in the second year of the reign of Darius, the king of Persia. And the prophets Haggai and Zechariah prophesied unto the Jews that were in Judah in the name of the God of Israel, even unto them. Then rose up Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and began to build the house of God, which is in Jerusalem. And with them were the prophets of God helping them. Shortly after that, I think the governor of the local governor there asked him, "Who hath commanded you to build the wall? Do you have any right to build the wall?" And me, hadn't mentioned, but in the Ezra chapter 1, there's a letter of what the king Cyrus had written to the to the people. And when they were challenged here about this, about building here, they said this. They asked him, "Who gave you permission to rebuild this temple and restore this structure?" They also asked for the people, for the names of all the men working on the temple, but because the God was watching over them, the leaders of the Jews were not prevented from building until a report was sent to Darius and returned his decision. So then this governor had sent a letter to Darius, and King Darius issued orders, chapter 6. King Darius had issued orders that a search be made in the archives, in the House of Scrolls, it says in the King James Version. And he had found the letter that King Cyrus had wrote to the people, and he commanded them to let the people build. Not only that, you must, verse 8 of chapter 6 says, he ordered them to pay the full construction costs without delay from the taxes, from his own taxes, and give the priests in Jerusalem whatever is needed, whatever they need, give it to them. And those who violate this decree, verse 11, it says, those who violate this decree in any way will have a beam pulled from their house, then they will be tied to it and flogged, and their house will be reduced to a pile of rubble. May the God who has chosen the city of Jerusalem as a place to honor his name destroy any king or nation that violates this command and destroys the temple. I, Darius, have issued this decree. Let it be obeyed with diligence. So right after that, the governor complied at once with the command. So the Jewish elders continued their work and were greatly encouraged by the preaching of the prophets Haggai and Zechariah. Verse 13. So March 12th, verse 15, the house is finished on the third day of the month, Adar, which is the sixth year of the reign of Darius the king. My translation says that was on March the 12th. Then the end of chapter 6, they celebrated. So you had the celebration of the Passover. So they had gone back to Jerusalem, and they had rebuilt the temple. And then chapter 7, after these things in the reign of Artaxerxes, king of Persia, Ezra, son of Seraiah, he came up to Jerusalem from Babylon, and the king gave him everything he asked for, because the gracious hand of the Lord was upon him. Some of the people of Israel, as well as some of the priests, Levites, singers, and gatekeepers, and temple servants, traveled up to Jerusalem with him in the 7th year of the king Artaxerxes' reign. And in verse 10 it says, "For Ezra had prepared his heart to seek the law of the Lord and do it, and to teach in Israel statutes and judgments." So that was what he had prepared to do. In chapter 8, we have an account of how Ezra got the people together. There's a list of people who were gathered there. And verse 15. He gathered them together at the river that runneth to Ahava, and there abode we in tents 3 days. And I viewed the people and the priests, and found there was none of the sons of Levi. That was interesting to me. They had camped there at the river. And I went over the math a bit, and there came up with something over 1,500 people that were gathered at the river. And they camped there for 3 days, and in that time Ezra was looking over the people, and he noticed that none of the tribe of Levi was present. So he sent a few men. It says, the end of verse 16, it says, men of understanding. He sent them with a commandment to the chief that, verse 17, end of verse 17 says, that they should bring unto us ministers for the house of our God. That was the role of the Levites. And it's interesting that they had this many people. They had 1,500 people were camped there, but as Ezra went over the list, he found that none of the tribe of Levi had there, and they waited until some of the tribe, until they could get some of the tribe of Levi to accompany them. So verse 31 says that they departed from the river on the 12th day of the first month to go to Jerusalem, and the hand of our God was upon us, and he delivered us from the hand of the enemy and of such as lay wait by the way. And in chapter 9, when Ezra got there, The princes came to me saying, the people of Israel and the priests and the Levites have not separated themselves from the people of the lands, doing according to their abominations. Verse 2, for they have taken of their daughters for themselves and for their sons, so that the holy seed have mingled themselves with the people of those lands. Yea, the hand of princes and rulers has been chief in trespass. So when I heard this, I rent my garment and my mantle and plucked off the hair of my head and my beard and sat down as stony. In verse 6 begins a prayer that Ezra prayed there. And in chapter 10, it says, while Ezra prayed and made this confession, weeping and lying down on the ground in front of the temple of God, a very large crowd of people from Israel, men, women, and children, gathered and wept bitterly with him. Verse 3, let us now make a covenant with our God to divorce our pagan wives and send them away with their children. We will follow the advice given by you and by the others who respect the commands of our God. Let it be done according to the law of God. Get up, for it is your duty to tell us how to proceed in setting things straight. We are behind you, so be strong and take action. So Ezra stood up and demanded that the leaders of the priests and the Levites and all the people of Israel swear that they would do as Shechaniah had said. They all swore a solemn oath. Then we have the account of how they divorced their foreign wives. And we have a list at the end of chapter 10. We have a list of those that were guilty of being married to foreign wives. So that finishes. That comes to the end of Ezra. And going into Nehemiah, when one of the people from Jerusalem had come back, I'm not sure Nehemiah asked them One of the people from Jerusalem had come back to, and Nehemiah asked him how things are going in Jerusalem, and they said, things are not going well for those who returned to the province of Judah. They are in great trouble and disgrace. The wall of Jerusalem has been torn down and the gates have been destroyed by fire. So I'm not sure if the wall had been rebuilt since the destruction of Jerusalem or why Nehemiah was surprised that the wall had been down. If anybody has any comment on that, I would welcome it. But it seems to me that maybe the wall had been torn down later, after the initial destruction of Jerusalem.
I was trying to figure that out myself earlier, and I don't know. I kind of think that the temple and the walls were being built at the same time, weren't they? The temple and the walls were being rebuilt at the same time, were they not?
Very likely they were. I'm not sure. It's not I don't see a record of them.
If you look at the Kings, like there was Cyrus, and then there was I can't say the name, but it looks a lot like Taxus or something, Artaxerxes. And then I think after that there was Darius. And Cyrus, I don't think, is mentioned in Nehemiah, but the other two are. And in chapter 8, I believe...
That was in Ezra?
Actually, in chapter 8 of Nehemiah, is... I think that's the same account of Ezra reading the law that you read of in Ezra. Is it in Ezra 6?
You think that's the same account?
I kind of think it is, but I'm not...
Okay. It may well be. I'm not a Bible scholar at all. Anyhow, if nobody has anything more to say, we'll continue on. Nehemiah. Anyhow, it was in the fall when that took place, and then in the spring, he was sitting before the king, and the king wondered why he was sad. He's never sad, why he would be sad now. And then he told him about it, and the king... Let the king live forever. Why should not my countenance be sad when the city, the place of my father, sepulchres lieth waste, and the gates thereof are consumed with fire? Then the king said unto me, For what dost thou make request? So I prayed to the God of heaven. And I said to the king, If it please the king, and if thy servant have found favor in thy sight, thou wouldest send me into Judah, unto the city of my father's sepulchres, that I may build it. And the king said to me, How long? And the queen also sitting by him, How long shall the journey be? And when wilt thou return? So it pleased the king to send me, and I set him a time. So Nehemiah went to Jerusalem, verse 11. He arrived in Jerusalem, and 3 days later, he went out into the night. In the night, he hadn't told anybody what his plans were, but he came to Jerusalem and he went out with a few men. No pack animals except the donkey that I was riding. It says here, after dark I went through the valley gate, past the Jackal's Well and over the dung gate to the inspect the broken walls and burnt gates. Then I went to the fountain gate, the king's pool, but my donkey couldn't get through the rubble, so though it was dark, I went up Kidron Valley and instead inspecting the wall before I returned back and entered again at the valley gate. The city officials did not know I'd been out there or what I was doing, for yet had not said anything about my plans, and yet I had not yet spoken to the Jewish leaders, priests, and the nobles, the officials, or anyone else in administration. But now I said, You know very well what trouble we are in. Jerusalem lies in ruins, and its gates have been destroyed by fire. Let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem and end this disgrace. Then I told them about how the gracious hand of God had been on me and about my conversation with the king. They replied at once, Yes, let's rebuild the wall. So the work began. And again, they had only just started when chapter 3 then is a picture of people at work building. But chapter 4, again, the enemies were opposing them. And then in verse 4 of chapter 4, then I prayed, Hear us, O God, for we are being mocked. May their scoffing fall back in their own heads, for may they themselves become captives in the foreign land. Do not ignore their guilt. Do not blot out their sins, for they have provoked you to anger in front of the builders. Last, the wall was completed to have its height around the entire city, for the people had worked with enthusiasm. But when there was enemies here, when they heard that the work was going ahead and the gaps in the walls of Jerusalem were being repaired, they were furious. They made plans to come and fight against Jerusalem and throw us into confusion. But we prayed to our God and guarded the city day and night to protect ourselves. Then the people of Judah began to complain. The workers are getting tired. There is much rubble to be removed. We will never be able to build the wall by ourselves. Meanwhile, our enemies were saying, before they know what's happening, we will swoop down on them and kill them and end their work. The Jews who lived near the enemy camp came and told us again and again, they will come from all directions and attack us. So I placed armed guards behind the lowest parts of the wall. In the exposed areas, I stationed the people to stand guard by the families armed with swords and spears. Then as I looked over the situation, I called together the nobles and the rest of the people and said to them, don't be afraid of the enemy. Remember the Lord who is great and glorious, and fight for your brothers, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your homes. When our enemies heard that we knew of their plans and God had frustrated them, we all returned to our work on the wall. But from then on, only half of the men worked with, while the other men stood guard with their spears, shields, bows, and coats of mail. The leaders stationed themselves behind the walls of Judah who were building the wall. The laborers carried on their work with one hand supporting their load and with one hand holding a weapon. All the builders had a sword belted to their side. The trumpeters stayed with me to sound the alarm. And then I explained to the nobles and officials and all the people, the work is very spread out and we are widely separated from each other along the wall. When you hear the blast of the trumpet, rush to wherever it is sounding, then our God will fight for us. Again, making reference to God doing the fighting. If the people rush to where the trumpet is sounding, then God will fight for us. In verse 22, I also told everyone living outside the walls to stay in Jerusalem. That way, they and their servants could help with guard duty at night and work during the day. Chapter 5, we have an account of some of them complaining about their needs weren't being met and how they were being suppressed by their fellow people, so that Nehemiah set that straight. In chapter 6, there is more opposition, but they didn't listen to them. They just kept building. So on verse 15, on the 20th and 5th day of the month, the wall was finished in the 20th and 50th day of the month, Elul, in 52 days. That would be, my translation says, on October 2nd, the wall was finished, 52 days after they had begun. So that was pretty fast. Then in chapter 8, verse 13, it says would translate to October the 9th. So that was 7 days after the wall was completed. They gathered together. with the priests and Levites and with Ezra and the scribe to go over the law in greater detail. And then Ezra read the law, and chapter 10, the end of chapter 9, they agreed to obey the law, and chapter 11, the people occupy Jerusalem. That's been gone over fairly quickly. Anybody have something they would like to mention?
One question I had earlier was whether or not the walls were built first or the temple was built first. In Ezra, it talks about rebuilding the temple, right? And in Nehemiah it tells us about rebuilding of the walls. And so I was spending most of the morning kind of flipping around trying to figure that out. And I'm not sure if I have or not. But in Ezra, there's three kings mentioned. Like I mentioned earlier, there's Cyrus, Artaxerxes, and Darius. And I think they were in that order. And in Nehemiah, all of that happened. The rebuilding of the walls happened in the reign of King Artaxerxes. And you can see that because I think it took only a couple months to rebuild the walls, right? 52 days,
yeah.
And in Nehemiah chapter 2, it talks in the month of Nisan, which I'm not sure when that is, but in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes.
Where are you reading?
Nehemiah 2, the first verse.
Okay.
This is when Nehemiah, when the king first asked Nehemiah why he said, and Nehemiah, and then sends Nehemiah to rebuild the walls. And in Ezra 7, verse 7, that's in the seventh year that some of the priests and the Levites went up to went to Jerusalem. So that's almost 13 years later that the walls were rebuilt. So I don't know. It almost looks to me as if this building of the temple took a long...
I'm not following you exactly, and not really. In chapter 4, it says, it talks about, Ezra chapter 4, verse 7, it says, during the reign of King Artaxerxes of Persia, it says even later. Verse 6 says, years later, after, it seemed to me this is after the rebuilding of the temple. It talks about years later, Xerxes, and verse 7 says, even later during the reign of King Artaxerxes of Persia. And then in verse 7, chapter 1, verse 7, it talks about the reign of King Artaxerxes of Persia. That's when Ezra rose up. So I would be thinking this would be later.
The temple would be later?
The temple would have been first.
Yes, I think so too. Where... I thought I had this. Somewhere it talks about there was opposition And then the King Darius found the letter that King Artaxerxes had written, not?
That was in...
Was that in Nehemiah?
Ezra. Chapter 6.
So, does the book of Ezra do this? Like, where it goes to a certain place and then goes back?
Because I think in sort it does, yes. Because, well, here, especially...
Because what were they trying to stop? What were they trying to stop that Darius dug up that letter? What? Why did Darius ever dig up that letter from King Artaxerxes?
Because they... There's a letter here in the end of chapter 5. There's a governor that had tried to stop them. The governor had thought that they were going up against the king, and then he said, "No, we're the Lord's servants. We're building," and then they said, "Just check your
archives.
Check your archives." And so that's what the governor wrote back to King Darius, and King Darius did the search, and they did find the letter.
So, was Artaxerxes after King Darius? Is that where I'm getting befuddled?
I believe so. Where, yes, I believe it was. There's here in chapter 4, it talks about, I'm not, maybe I'm, you're talking about the king Artaxerxes in chapter 4 of Ezra, is that right?
Yes.
There's a small, from verse 6 to the end of 23, I believe, is a small, I don't know. It's a narrative there, I guess, that really, it's just, it didn't really happen. It's just saying, later on this happened.
Mm-hmm. When you look at the timeline, when you look at the... No, when you look at the time frame, in Ezra chapter 4, it says 535 B.C., when you go to Nehemiah chapter 1, it's 445 B.C. That tells me it's 90 years difference. I don't know if that helps clear up it or not.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying in Ezra, where was your timeline?
In Ezra, it's 535.
So...
In Ezra chapter 4, it's 535.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That's 445. That's 90 years difference.
So, which was first?
The temple.
Ezra was first.
The rebuilding of the temple would have been first.
So, all that time, this temple had been rebuilt and was functioning in Jerusalem, and the walls weren't.
That's what I see here when I was reading in. Nehemiah, I'm not sure about that. If when Nehemiah asked how things were going, he said, "Well, the walls are down, the gates are burnt." I'm not sure if the walls were down and the gates were burnt, if that was a result of the initial invasion of Jerusalem, or if it wasn't. Mm. If it would have been, I'm not sure why Nehemiah would have been surprised that it is that way. Maybe he took for granted that the walls have been rebuilt, And they weren't, or they had been torn down again. I don't know.
Yeah.
I jump into the mix here. I think we got some homework to do. That's a good challenge, because I've been reading in Ezra and Nehemiah myself nights, and I'm doing what Wilmer did. I take my Bible that says my year's on top of my margin, and I think that's gospel. I'm not sure it is. From what I can see, it looks like Nehemiah 8 and Ezra 3 might be the same. I have this feeling God's got this. There's some treasures in here that we're going to have to dig pretty hard to figure out. And I would encourage us to try. I'd like to know, too, because it seems there was Zerubbabel who finally built the temple. There was Zechariah and Malachi, I believe you can see it. Zechariah was one of the prophets. There was another prophet there who was saying, you got to finish building the temple. Somebody started the temple, didn't finish it. Then eventually they finished it. But 13 years after Ezra went to Jerusalem, it seems like Nehemiah did, but the writings, if you look, do a little bit of study about the book of Ezra and Nehemiah, originally it might have been one book, I think. And so I think there's some timelines crisscrossing here that's got us challenged, and I dare to think that there's some deep truths here.
I think they were one book, and I think Ezra wrote them both, I believe, and yet Nehemiah... I'm not sure. And yet Nehemiah, there's a lot in Nehemiah that talks about I did this, I did that. So it seems to be his own writings. We're going over our time here, but there is a few things that I'd like to wrap up yet. I'm hoping that during our study we did learn some things, and maybe you could help me out with them. But one of them is, remember that the battle is the Lord's. We can... go through these books and we can dig through here and wonder, well, what is the big deal, whether or not the temple was built first or whether it was built last or when this was or why it was. But there's a lot of things in the Bible that seem not to matter, and yet I believe they're the words that have been given to us, and they have stood for ages and have been a blessing to people for ages who have dug through them and sought for direction. The battle is the Lord's. Anything else? The battle is the Lord's, and wait on the Lord. If we don't wait on the Lord, we're like dead men rising up. We're filling the valley with dead men. Referring to some others that we hadn't talked about today either, so don't go without the Levites. Nehemiah, motivation to build and to fight for your brothers, sons, daughters, and your wives, and your homes. That's somewhere in Nehemiah. That's motivation to fight. And Ezra, determined to study and obey the law of the Lord like Ezra did. We had mentioned Romans chapter 12 some time earlier, and Nehemiah chapter 3 is a picture of people, everybody working together according to the faith. Working together according to the faith that has been given to us. Be prepared. For the Lord's blessing. We saw that how last Sunday, I think we'd been talking about that, when we're not prepared for the Lord's blessing, when the Lord pours out his blessing and we're not prepared, we get trampled. Don't let the enemy help build. Not sure if I have room for more. Nehemiah, we read about having a trumpeter. Nehemiah had a trumpeter close to himself at all times, and when the trumpet sounded, the people were to gather around to where the trumpet was. And then the Lord will fight for them. Then after all, when the building is completed, the temples are built, and the walls are constructed, then there is a safe place. City, one thing we didn't do, we talked earlier about the equivalence, spiritual equivalence of the city and the wall and the temple. The city is the church, and the wall is God's protection. And the temple is the believer. In our study, what we had been doing, that's what we had been studying. When we have a city and we have a wall, then we have a safe place for the temple.